Let's get to Simon Garlick, the boss of the Fremantle Football Club, who joins us online. Simon, appreciate your time.
Not a problem at all, Sam. Good to be with you.
So, Simon, let's go through the logistics. When are you heading over to the Gold Coast?
Yeah, still something we're finalising. Obviously, now that we have surety around our first date being on that Saturday, March... Saturday, June 13, against Brisbane, it gives us a bit more clarity. There's a couple of options there in the sense that, you know, do we potentially treat that as an away game as per normal and go in there, fly to Brisbane, have that game and then settle ourselves into the Gold Coast? I think more likely is the scenario whereby we'll head over early that week, possibly on the Monday and Tuesday, get ourselves settled in and then make the short bus trip up for the game on the Saturday against Brisbane itself, just to make sure we're really comfortable and acclimatised in southeast Queensland.
Have you finalised how many players and staff you'll be taking?
Not as yet. As you would be aware, I'm sure, Sam, we've got the option of taking the entire group. It's interesting. When you add all of our rookies, our Category B rookies, we've actually got a list of 48, which is a significant amount. And as you can imagine, just with, you know, different players coming into the system in their first year, being at really early stage of the development, some of our injured group who are a bit of a way off, there's some decisions we've got to make. There's pluses and minuses for both. I think, interestingly, even some of our long-term injury players, for them to be around the group, also to have access to all of our high-performance and rehabilitation staff and resources, it can tend to make a bit of sense to come. But obviously, there's a fair few considerations with that. So again, you know, I think we've got to, in reality, this week is a bit of a D-day for us to finalise a lot of those detailed decisions as we lock down our home away from home.
So are you leaning towards taking the whole group then?
Yeah, I think that's the way it's more likely to end up. We think there's an opportunity. I think I've spoken to you and Jared previously about, we've got a really young group who are now looking at really building and developing its identity and culture. I think we're either the youngest or second youngest, depending on which metric you use. So for us to potentially have an opportunity when you go away, often the road stuff is where you get that opportunity to really accelerate some of those relationships and the discussions you can have. So we're seeing it as an opportunity, as first and foremost, to win as many games as we possibly can. But we think there's an added bonus for us to really build on that type of cultural and identity build that we can do over this next short period.
Did you apply with the AFL to have extra staff on site, given that you're going to a hub?
Yeah, we've had that discussion. I think it there's a fair bit of logic to it. I think we're not looking to be unreasonable and gain any type of competitive advantage, but the reality it is, I think the AFL looking at more people being involved on a game day. Clearly, when we're going to be 24/7 away from home, the opportunity to have the people that we think probably more veer towards the player welfare side, health and wellbeing component of it, with that touring party, we think it makes a pretty compelling case. So that's a discussion that's yet to be finalised, but we think, as I said, that there's some logic to it, and we'd like to see an opportunity to do that if we can.
How many more did you apply for?
We've spoken about four or five different additional roles, so we don't think it's excessive. As I said before, this isn't necessarily something that we're looking at from a performance advantage, but rather something to ensure that we look after our players, and not just the playing group, but the staff as well too. It's clearly it's a significant change for our game in particular, and something that wasn't, you know, envisaged at the start of the year. So having something in place where we can ensure that our people are looked after makes a heck of a lot of sense from our perspective.
Yep. Okay. What about the players with families and children? I know you're a young side. I was surprised to learn that you only have three players with kids. David Mundy would be one of them. Maybe Michael Walters. I'm not sure who the other two are. How will they go with the hubs, do you think? It's obviously it's an extra challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It's probably not to the same degree as some other clubs. I think I read that West Coast have 15 players with young families as well too, so it's more significant in that sense. We're really approaching it from a viewpoint of each individual circumstance, and we're really passing it over to the players themselves and the playing group to look at what works best for them. I think there's certainly an argument to say to you, go over in the initial stage and zero in and look to optimise a focus on the games themselves and winning as much as we possibly can, and then perhaps looking at families making and partners and the like making trips over towards the back half of our time there. But there's such variation in circumstances, Sam, depending on age of children, you know, different scenarios that pop up. So we're being really open and flexible in that sense. And I think it's important for us to continue to be so. There might even be changes as and when we're over there. That's what life throws at you. So I think it's great that we've got the capability to cater for each of those circumstances. And, you know, based on the fact that we're going to be there for an extended period of time, we have to take day-to-day life activities and the way things change into account. So that's what we'll be looking to do throughout.
We're speaking to the CEO of the Fremantle Football Club, Simon Garlick, online on Sports Day. Simon, how closely are you and Trevor Nisbet, your counterpart at West Coast, involved in the negotiations with the government? I know there are so many hypotheticals and ifs and buts in these situations, but there must be some questions being asked as to, you know, what happens if we get through rounds 2 to 5 and the border restrictions in WA aren't eased.
Yeah, look, Sam, we're pretty close in reality to the point where, you know, Chris Dawson in particular, who's our Chief Commissioner of the Police here in WA, you know, Chiefs of Staff of the Premier's Office, the Chief Medical Officer, we're having discussions with all of those key stakeholders, understanding the priority being the community health aspect of it, but obviously looking to see where we might be able to work on scenarios that allow for some level of flexibility. So, you know, it's an ongoing discussion. As you mentioned, there's such a significant part that'll all play in what the rest of the season looks like. You know, have a high level of confidence around the AFL as a whole, as an industry, both in a head office at Docklands, but also other clubs, that, you know, regardless of the border situation, whether that stays as it is and requires a hub type approach, or whether there's some flexibility with that and a more traditional fly in, fly out model can be applied to it. You know, we're really confident there'll be a run of games here in WA at some point. The AFL are really determined and on the record, I think, as saying that a big part of the flexible fixture that Travis will talk to you about and has been on the record of saying is to ensure that we can get as much equity in it. So I'm really confident on that end. What we don't know is just where it'll end up from a border control perspective here in WA. And that's not both,
yep,
you know, the way people can come in and out, and particularly around the quarantine environment. As we all know, that's one of the biggest factors that we'd need to look at working through with the government here. But yeah, to answer your question, there's been really fruitful discussions. They understand the challenges that we've got, and we're continuing to work with them to try and get a really good outcome as the health outcomes tend to look like they're improving on a daily basis.
Will your players be able to play golf in Queensland?
It's a good question, Sam. It's one that I think the thing that we're focusing on as an industry, really, particularly in the short term, is doing everything we can to ensure that the season gets away without any interruptions. And the most logical interruption would be a positive test. I think everyone's doing everything they possibly can in that sense. The priority being, and when you boil it all down, we all love to have a hit of golf or go for a surf. I think when you boil it all down, the preference is that if there's some sacrifices in the short term, you know, the greater good for us all. You know, you're a big part of the industry like so many others are, that we want to get games away. And if we can do something that controls that and helps that happen, then we'll do so. I think the one thing that we're all learning through this period is how rapidly things change. And the reality of the scenario is, you know, we're not playing games for another, what is it, 17 days or so? It's 17 days or so. If the trend keeps going along as it is, if we get a good couple of weeks up there, I'd like to think there might be some flexibility as things open up from a community perspective as well too. So don't want to put a line through it, mate, but at the same token, you know, the short term, we're just focusing on making sure we observe every possible protocol we can.
And I know we talked about this last time you and I had a chat when Jared was here, and we mentioned Jesse Hogan. It sounds like news today that he's going to travel to the Gold Coast. So that's sensational news, not just in a footy sense, but you know, in a personal sense for Jesse, that he's feeling well enough to get back to the club and maybe even get close to playing games again.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you when we caught up, Sam, that the progress that Jesse had been making just on a personal front was really encouraging, and you know, we couldn't be more pleased on that in that sense. And but at the time, and it still remains, that the footy component's secondary, and it's hard not to get a bit excited. He's come back to training last week in incredible shape. He's actually takes you back a little bit in terms of how fit and how well he looks in himself and the condition he's in. And it's hard not to get seduced a little bit by that in terms of, okay, what might that mean for an on-field perspective? But we're actually trying to, and we're going to maintain real discipline in that sense, that the overriding priority throughout all this has been his well-being and his health, and that's going to remain. So we keep taking advice, keep working with him. But you know, the reality is he's the progress he's made in recent times has been fantastic. So don't know where it'll end on that front, Sam. And you know, whilst it's tempting to think about, you know, when and where it could look from a return perspective on the field, but we'll work through that as it comes to pass. But you know, it's really pleasing. Most importantly, from a health and wellbeing perspective for Jesse.
Yeah, it certainly is. Obviously, footy is a bonus, but he's such a talented man in that area that we'd all love to see him playing footy again, and would certainly do great things on the field for the Fremantle Footy Club. Hey, Simon, really appreciate you jumping online. It's been a really challenging time for people across the world, but for the 18 clubs that we talk about here regularly on Sports Day and the AFL. But it's good to hear that footy is back. Good luck to the Dockers in the next four games.
Good on you, Sam. Appreciate the support.